namastu mane dvishavahai. Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So just before we start, then, just to make it clear is that we have in the morning the 6 to 7 time. It's a class, the Mahabharata, for the children, because not that the what is being spoken is not valuable for the adults. The difficulty is that in that environment, if adults come in to the class, then the children have a tendency to get embarrassed. They won't ask questions. They won't do anything like that. So that's why the request is that you're coming for class, then only come at, you know, 7 or after the class is ended, you know, the kids have left, then you can come in here. Otherwise, if over here, chant on this side or, you know, around, but don't come into this area until after the class is over. Okay. The Vedas. Srila Prabhupada compares the Vedas to a manual by which the customer can understand how to use properly the goods he has bought. Quote, the other day I explained, Veda means just like this dictaphone machine is manufactured. Along with it, one literature is also compiled. So customers, they were given the delivery of the machine as well as the literature how to use it. That is the Vedas. Therefore, Krishna says that Vedanta Krit, I am the compiler of the Vedas, because if he does not give the literature, then how will we use the machine? The manufacturer of the machine, he knows how to use it, what it is, what for it is, how to manipulate it. Srila Prabhupada lecture on Bhagavad Gita in Paris, August 5th, 1976. Similarly, by following the Vedic rules, the living entities can learn how to deal properly with the material energy and how to attain liberation from it. So this point, Krishna says he is Vedanta Vit, Vedanta Krit. He's the one who's written the Vedas, he's the knower of the Vedas, he's the compiler of the Vedas. So it would be rather foolish of a devotee to disregard the Vedas, to say they don't apply. Modern man is special. He's in a unique category. So what you're saying is you're in a category that's not controlled by God, right? Outside God's purview. So now, seeing that this is coming, because it only comes from a Western mentality. So now, according to Western philosophy and religion, what living entity is outside of God's control? The devil. Okay, so now we don't mind it if you want to take that philosophy, just make it clear what your position is. And stop saying that it's devotional. Does that make sense? Right? So this is the bottom line, is that the Vedas are written by God. God is not so stupid that he doesn't know what New York is or London. You know? You think God didn't create it? How can you put those buildings on that little island in New York unless God allows it? The laws that allow a building to be built of that much in one place, how is it there unless the island can hold it up? Right? They can't do something that God doesn't allow. Right? They still have to follow the laws of God, so they're still applying. So it's only pride and ignorance that someone thinks that the Vedas do not apply today as much as they did before. You have to be very arrogant to think that you do something that's out of God's control. What's the big deal? You know, they eat a little meat, they have some illicit sex, they have some intoxication, they have some gambling. That wasn't there in the Vedic time. Right? They didn't have prostitutes, just they were a little higher caliber. right? They had some culture, they had some knowledge in Shastra, they were very educated. They weren't just some, you know, little girl on the side of the road, right? Intoxication, they've always had it. Wine, you know, did New York invent wine? Did London? Right? And these other entities, so is that as something new? Illicit sex, that's definitely got to be a modern invention. Gambling, right? It wasn't actually gambling. If you look at it, the academic, you know, the Yudhishthira and Shakuni, they weren't actually gambling, right? They were just playing, you know, some slight form of, a different form of monopoly, right? Does that make sense? So what has changed? Right? Instead of wearing a dhoti because you don't have the skill and ability to wear one, therefore, you know, you just sew it up and then you call it pants. You know, Punjabis were wearing pants long before, you know, Americans were. So what is this special thing that modern man is that he has it so different? He's got a computer, he's got a mobile phone. Okay, so what? But in his own life, his dealing with his family, his eating, his sleeping, his mating, his defending, what's changed? Right? What has changed? This is the ruse. This is the illusion that is being presented, and unfortunately by devotees, that there's something different about now. Therefore, it doesn't apply. And they'll use, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules. Great, but you sure care a lot about Western rules. We chant Hare Krishna, we don't have to follow the Vedic, but you have to follow the modern. It's just nonsense. It's just lack of faith. It's lack of purity. It's just lack. That's all. And there's nothing glorious about it. And no one should try to establish it. And bring out, oh, yukta vairagya, this, that. Yes, but yukta vairagya means what? You take the modern scenario and use it according to Vedic principles. That's what Prabhupada was doing. Prabhupada went to America, he changed it. Right? And now America wants to change this movement to be Americans. What does that mean? And then we're going to say we're following Prabhupada? Does this make any sense? The Veda is the foundation of everything. You don't accept the Veda, you don't accept Krishna. Krishna's written the Veda. One of the 64 items that's right in Nectar Devotion is Krishna follows the Shastra. So even God follows the Shastra, even though he wrote it. So what did he write then? He writes what he likes to do. So if you don't like the Vedas, means you don't like what Krishna does. How are you going to like being in a pastimes where they follow the Vedas? You're not going to like it. You know, you say, oh, it's Kali Yuga. Who made Kali Yuga? Modern man or God? Right? Every Kali, it's always the same thing. Every creation, it's the same thing. Right? It's the same 8,400,000 species of life. It's the same 14 planetary systems. It's the same Bhurbhuva Swa. It's the same mountains and rivers and valleys and, you know, oceans. It's the same thing. They do the same thing. A dog in China is doing exactly the same thing as the dog here, as in Australia, as in Europe, as in America. Is it doing something different? It's doing exactly the same thing. So it's simply pride only that modern man thinks he's special and different. It's lack of faith. It's lack of purity. Yeah, problem with the Vedas, you do have to be a little pure. Now it's understood by chanting Hare Krishna, you have the adhikar that you can be that pure. But that's only if you want to. Because it is a voluntary process. One would say, oh, these don't apply. How it doesn't apply? You know what I'm saying? You go back into the 60s. In the 60s, everything was somehow or another in black and white then, right? You know, it's just everything is very blasé, nothing happening at all. And everybody was really well fixed in their just mediating illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. That was the lifestyle. Prabhupada went in there and changed it, right? That's something like 40% of the people are vegetarian. And that's growing. And why is it growing? Because we're out there preaching? Not at all. Right? So the whole point is these things, that's not the big deal. That can be adjusted in a moment. Right? But if you're simply overwhelmed by the moment and controlled by the moment, there's no way you're going to know how to act. So only those people who don't have faith, do not know how to lead, do not know how to apply the Shastra, can make these statements. It's just the way it is. You can say Prabhupada didn't care, but what did Prabhupada wear? What did Prabhupada eat? How did Prabhupada live? He doesn't care about material. But if you're going to use them, why wouldn't you use the better part for Krishna? If I'm going to go into the kitchen and I have a good cauliflower and I have a half rotten cauliflower, which one will I use for Krishna? The good one. But we chant Hare Krishna. What do we care? I like rotten cauliflowers, so why can't I use that? Does that make sense? So this is the thing. And if they say, well, we've tried the Vedic, it didn't work, that just shows their own foolishness. Right? Somebody takes a knife, gets cut by it, and then says, oh, these knives are bad, they just cut. No one can use them. You know, it's the modern age, knives don't work in this age, you know, like this and that. That's what we're talking about. Yukta Vairagya is fine. You engage everything. But what's the mentality of engaging it? Are you the field of activities? I am modern man, therefore, you know, it's like this. That means you are the field. So you're just as mundane as, you know, the material item you're claiming to be engaging in Krishna's service. Only when you understand you're the soul, not those items, then you can function. And what does the soul care, if, you know, about the position? So if the Vedic's superior, why that wouldn't be used? Vedic's not available. You know, it means then you use something modern. But as we're discussing here, if it works, that's because it's Vedic. But the point is why not use the mentality that's coming from the Vedic line? Right? How the Acharyas used the modern. Everybody was doing modern. It's not a new thing to fit in. The Goswamis were dealing with modern. Rupa Goswami was preaching in the circles of Akbar, Man Singh, these kind of people. Emperors of India, right? We have any devotees preaching on that level? Right? Any of our devotees have been invited by, you know, the President of America or the Prime Minister of, you know, England, a Chancellor of Germany or something, to come in and work out a problem that they can't solve, right? And they're willing to bring you, fly you in for the day and take you back the same day. So people should get off their high horse that they're doing something different that no one else has ever done. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a district magistrate, and he was the best district magistrate in India. He was moving with the top intellectuals of the time. There was no one else. All the people that were forming, you know, this new India, this modern India, he was moving with them. He was influencing them. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, oh, the top people of Calcutta, he was moving with them. Right? What's his name? Srinivasacharya, the king, you know, Vishnupur, like that. He became devotee, and he decided everyone in the kingdom is going to be devotees. And if you don't like it, you can leave. Right? So who was not? Who in our line was not moving with the top people? Lord Chaitanya wasn't moving with Chankazi, Maharaj Prataparudra, right? Rupa and Sanatan, they were managing East India, right? And not as a company. You know what I'm saying? And so they don't know anything about this. They're just living under a tree and kind of like, you know, staying out of the way, trying to fit in, you know, with the trees. That's why they only wear kopans, because trees don't have any clothes, so you're trying to fit in, you know, with the trees. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's not a problem. It's the usage of modern, clothes and positions and food and all that. That's not a problem. If the mentality is devotional and in line with the Vedas. But if it's not, because the only way you can use the modern is with the modern mentality, that we have nothing good to say about. That, as Prabhupada would say, we kick on your face. Right? Like that. You know, so this whole idea, modern man, he's so special. And the modern culture is something so important that you have to deal with. The people in the modern culture are freaking out. They're trying to find out. They're doing, all kinds of research, things and different things and writing books and trying to figure out what's wrong with it. And we're trying to say it's great. It's sad. But the saddest thing was this last tour that I took around the world. It was sad. My mother's house, and she is a card-carrying, flag-waving malecha. Her house was cleaner than any temple that I visited in ISKCON. Cleaner. My mom's house. And when I visited devotees' houses, they were just as dirty. Right. Just as dirty. And then we're going to say, we're fitting in. You know, cleanliness rules, fanatic. You know what I'm saying? You know, these, yeah. So it's very, very, very important to understand the position of the Vedas and not just, breeze it by in a moment that, oh, no, it doesn't, you know, oh, yeah, I understand that. Been there, done that. I challenge, where is the person who has been there and done that and understands the position of the Vedas in relationship to us? Our acharyas never disregard the Vedas. In fact, it's the fourth offense against the holy name, which we make blatantly. The first offense, well, if you can make the first offense and consider it, you know, institutional, why can't you make the fourth? Third we make, fourth we make, right? Then the holy name, it must be imagination, because you can't you can purify anyone from my past sinful activities before being a devotee, but if you're a devotee and you do any sinful activities, you can't be purified. Yeah. Where did that come from? Who made that up? Which conditioned soul came up with that concept? Because it wasn't any of the acharyas, it wasn't Krishna, it wasn't any of the shastra. It was some conditioned soul and other foolish conditioned souls thought this sounds great. It fits into my nice little moralistic concept of what is religion and philosophy. Why do we use the term moral? Moral comes from the Vedas. It's called ethics, called niti. You have dharma that your morality is based on. Morality means being nice. You don't know why you should be nice, you just know you should be nice, right? Don't steal. Right? Don't disturb others. But why shouldn't you? Why shouldn't you steal? Right? You're at it. What does steal mean? You just take something when you see it, you like it. You know, then we'll say, no, if you take something, it belongs to someone else. When you go out into a forest and you take something from there, why wouldn't that be stealing, since the forest belongs to God? Right? But we've decided, no, that's not stealing. Right? Does that make sense? But the principle is why not? What is the problem? This is why morality falls short. And making decisions based on that, institutional decisions based on that, misses the point. Because morality has to be based on dharma. And if it's not, it's in Bhagavatam, in the second verse, kicked out as chala dharma. It's cheating religion. Why? Because it's not connected to religion. You don't know what is the nature. God is in control of everything. He gives everyone their quota. Right? Isha vasham idam sarvam. So now if you take someone else's quota, that's stealing. Right? Because that's their quota to engage in the Lord's service and to perfect their life. You take it, what do they have to engage? Therefore, stealing is bad. Stealing isn't bad on its own. Stealing is bad is because it goes against the laws of God, which means everybody, every human being should be engaged in the Lord's service. That's why it's bad. You understand? So this is the whole difficulty, is that we're using modern concepts to try to run a spiritual society, and it is failing more than miserably. You know? Miserably would be a euphemism on how bad it is. It's a total devotional and cultural disaster. You could probably even use the term Holocaust. Like that. It's that bad. Because you're targeting a particular culture and trying to remove it. Right? And then what you're replacing it with, the people who are committed to it, you know, that they don't know anything else, think there's something wrong with it. This is the problem. So why is that? Because there is no faith in the Veda. Prabhupada made that point when that one devotee didn't believe in, about, you know, the position of the moon. And so Prabhupada said they didn't go to the moon. And so that devotee left. And Prabhupada was saying, he can disbelieve me, but how can he disbelieve the Shastra? Shastra is saying the position of the moon. Right? And they're saying it's just right next door. But the Shastra says it's actually twice as far away, it's twice as high on the movement as the sun. You know, so the path of the sun, you know, how much distance is between that level and the earth, the moon moves twice as high as that. So even just that way they couldn't get to the moon, let alone throw in all the other things, your Van Allen belt, this, that, blah. You know, so how could they do it? So his point was, is how could he not believe in the Shastra? Because everything else that we discuss and believe in is based on Shastra. Shastra says there's God. Shastra says that we're servants of God. Shastra says we're the soul, and what's the position of the material world, the spiritual world. So without Shastra, then, so how is it we just take what we like and leave what we like? Like if it's just pure philosophy, that will take. But if it comes to culture, that we don't want anything to do with. Unless we can use it for our own purposes to control others and get what we want done. Then it's useful. Right? Does that make sense? So this point is very, very essential, is that the Veda can never be disregarded. And the Veda is so all-pervading that the knowledge of the Veda is even used by modern man. But modern man doesn't know that that's what he's using. You know, it'd be like you know, you've dropped some, you know, implement on the road, right? And some, you know, how you say, forest person finds it. Like, say, you're camping in the woods, you drop a knife there, you know, some fancy knife. Then this tribal comes along, finds it, right? Then he starts using this and claiming he's the inventor of it, right? And then going so far as to say that, you know, the culture that knife has come from isn't useful now. It's that foolish. It's that stupid. But due to false ego, right? Because the whole problem is ego. This can't be dealt with. So, therefore, is that even there is, it's God's world, it's God's laws. And so, what is illusion? What is Maya? Simply, people don't recognize it's God's law. That's all. Maya means you're not seeing, you know, it means what that which is not. So you're thinking something's different from what it actually is. It's God's. You think it's not. That's the illusion. Not that it's not there. Okay? The illusion's not that it's a Mercedes-Benz. The illusion is what you think that, you know, pile of tin and rubber is. Right? It's a car. It moves around. It'll take you from point A to point B. Let me say. But if you identify with it and think I'm special because I got one, that's Maya. But that it gets you from point A to point B, so we use it for Krishna, then that's not Maya. And so you have to know what you're targeting, what you're trying to fit into, you know, how you're trying to work with it. But the basis has to be that the Veda is not wrong. Right? Veda, of course, is vast. Therefore, those aspects of the Veda that are important to us, recommended by the Acharyas, we stick to those books. And those books also, then, we follow them according to the Acharyas' purports, their directions. Right? And all that, then, is seen in line with our Acharyas. So what Srila Prabhupada says. Then we'll get the right perspective on everything. Then it works very nicely. It works very nicely. So in other words, it's mentality that makes the difference. It's not the Veda. It's not the rules of the Veda. It's the mentality. You know what I'm saying? Our temples are going and begging from the Indians in the West and trying to placate them and say they're doing a great job over there becoming Mlechas and Yavanas. Why? What's the one reason why?
Money.
That's it. Before they figured out they had money, they couldn't care less about the Indian population in the West. Right? So now they figure out they make money. But the funny thing is even though they're following many of the Western customs and that, a lot of them they're not. And that a lot that they're not sets them apart from those same other Westerners that are not from that background. And therefore, they are all the doctors and lawyers and businessmen, and they run the whole place. And strangely enough, they're following sometimes more of the Vedic rules and regulations than our own devotees are. And then our devotees will say, it doesn't work. This has got to be some supreme stupidity. It really has to be. It really has to be. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. You know? We're not talking here, you know, a pant or a pasta. We're talking here a mentality, an attachment to a Western identity. And the feeling of superiority. That's what we're talking about. Someone wears pants around, who cares? But what's the reason they're wearing them? That's the point of discussion. That's a point of discussion. Right? Yes.
How would you answer a devotee who says that Prabhupada made mistakes in his translations?
Prabhupada made mistakes in his translations. I would say the person who said that, I would have no regard for them. I mean, no regard, and I don't care who it is. How would they know what a mistake is? One, how do they know the Vedas? What Sanskrit do they know anyway? I guarantee you, except for the devotees in this school, no one studied, and Banu Maharaj, no one studied Vedic Sanskrit. Prabhupada could translate Ishupanishad. Gopi Puranadana cannot translate Veda. He can't. He does not know Vedic Sanskrit, which is not his fault, because most all our books are all classical Sanskrit anyway. Rita Anandamarsh knows classical Sanskrit. All these people know classical Sanskrit. And which book, or what is their dictionary that they're learning the vocabulary from? Yaska? Nirukta? You know? Amar Kosh? No. Monier Williams. Monier Williams is one of the persons, along with Max Müller, that was hired to write books to destroy the Vedic culture. Right? And now they're going to use their words, and then they're going to think they know all the Sanskrit there is. Right? The amount of synonyms in Sanskrit is great. Either due to technicality, either due to the element of gyan, or due to the element of poetics. So, what is the broadness in the translations that we don't have devotees that are qualified enough to understand that? And I can say that blatantly. You know what I'm saying? So, who is there that can say Prabhupada made mistakes? That's a demoniac mentality. It doesn't mean the person's a demon, but it's a demoniac mentality. And it won't get them very far. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, what Sanskrit they knew? They have to look in a dictionary to do their Sanskrit translation. They have to sit there with a dictionary. You know what I'm saying? You know, just sit there for half an hour and do one shloka. Which is natural. That is the way scholars work. But it doesn't mean you know the language. You're going to say that someone coming from Braj, who speaks the original language, you know, moves in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes where they know both Bengali and Sanskrit. So that means Prabhupada knows Bengali, Sanskrit, and Braj, Brajvasa. And he can't translate? And you're going to say some Malechan Yavana out of some scumbag gutter in the West, you know, is now knows more Sanskrit than Prabhupada? This little flea now is somehow or another better? This has got to be supreme arrogance. Say he doesn't know English? He learned from people who, they're the ones that invented English. He didn't learn from Americans, and he learns from the British English. They're the ones, it, strangely enough, it is their language. Americans borrowed it from them. And then they're going to say, he doesn't know English? He went to an English medium school. You know? And they'll say, well, terminology, so it's communication. He doesn't maybe know modern English where, you know, most of the grammatical options that you could use are seen in a bad light. Sanskrit uses 9 voices. English recognizes 2, of which one of them they don't like. You know, and now you're going to say someone who knows 9 voices can't translate something into some stupid, you know, language that only has 2? You know? It doesn't make sense. You know, Prabhupada's reading from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purports. Our own devotees, our nice English-speaking devotees, can't understand half of what he says. Prabhupada can read it and understand it. It's such, you know, fancy English. The problem is all these things boil down to false ego. You know? And they're polluted by, you know, modern academics, modern social concepts, modern philosophies. It's just pollution. It's not actual reality. Because they don't know the variety of words, because they're stuck with Monier Williams. The Vedic Sanskrit takes much more, you know, what are the varieties of the meanings of words. And you also have to understand one other thing, is that when half of the fun that Krishna has with the residents of Braja is based on a grammatical usage of the word called chala, which means someone says one thing and you take the word out of context and you use it in another context and make a joke out of it. So that means you really have to know the language and vocabulary a lot to be able to do that. And if that's what they spend their whole day doing, why this person wouldn't be good at it? So they're just taking Prabhupada at face value. He's just another guy who went, you know, Indian, who went to some, you know, Indian schools and all that, and then he comes over to America and then he tries to translate some books to help out some, you know, Malechas and Yavanas. And so now I've gone to school, I've got a degree, and now I'm God. You know? So it's very painful that someone who would even claim to be part of this mission could even say that. We're not talking sentiment. I may be presenting it very strongly here, but what I've discussed up to now is just that, you know, they're using a dictionary that's designed to destroy the culture. So therefore, it's going to use the words that way. If you read their translations of things, they use, if it's something that's just straight philosophy, but it's not necessarily opposed to Christianity, then they'll generally translate it okay. If it's general social things that they could agree with, you know, be nice, be good, they'll translate it nicely. But if it's something that they would consider would not be Christian, or it would not be a Christian concept, they will pick the bad synonym. They will pick the synonym that will make it look politically incorrect. Right? That's the way they do. That's what they bring paid to do. Right? Max Müller is paid £10,000. That's back in the 1800s. That's a lot of money to do this work. And so now they're going to take the same works and everything and follow in the footsteps of them. And what is their purpose? If they follow in the footsteps, their purpose is destroy the Vedic culture. And that's what these devotees are trying to do. Maybe unknowingly, but that's what they're being engaged in. You follow these academic paths, this is what you're going to end up with. You know, so, therefore, we can't give them much credence. Yes?
They also say that because Prabhupada wasn't an astronomer as such, therefore he's making these mistakes in his translations.
An astronomer? But why would...
Who's they?
There's so many theys. No, but there's so many theys. It doesn't matter. No, but that doesn't matter. It's that people who know, and people who don't, they don't need to know. You know what I'm saying? What does it matter? It makes some mistakes there, but how do they know that that's actually a mistake? You know what I'm saying? There's even our own astrologer, it means our own people, they take it. And it says in the Bhagavatam that the planets move on certain paths. And what is their conclusion? Because they can't figure it out. They can work out the paths of the planets. Because if the Earth is the sun, center, and the sun goes around the Earth, and all the other planets go around the sun, which is what it says, that means when they move around the Earth, they move around in these kind of like, you know, doily patterns. Right? So depending where they are, the pattern is tighter or wider, and farther or out or closer. So those patterns, that they can mechanically say. But then they'll go on to say that they aren't actually planets. You know what I'm saying? Those are the earth mandalas. But those may be the mandalas, but the planets move there also. So I'm saying our own people, they come up with weirdo answers. Right? And now they're going to say Prabhupada doesn't know astrology? What does it matter? You know? Vidyananda Maharshi knows nothing about deity worship. No one minded him translating the 11th canto on, you know, the process of deity worship. You know what I'm saying? So what's the big deal? You know what I'm saying? So the point is perfection is what? Connection with Krishna? Or some science? And that science is, even the modern scientists, they say that because light bends, they can't actually tell where anything is in the universe. But they'll go on with impunity saying it's over there. But by the bending of that, it could be over that side. They don't have no idea. So what matters is how you see it, how it influences you, and how it is actually in position of how you get yourself out of the universe. Right? What's the use of knowing the universal structure? What are you going to do with it? What is, minuscule man sitting on this planet going to do with the astrological structure of the universe? What can you do with it? You can't go there. So what's the other point? It shows you how you can entangle yourself in the material world, how you can get yourself out. In fact, how we describe it, the Buddhists describe the same thing. Why? Because the Buddhists are only interested in getting out. But the things that describe how it works, so as far as the astrology and all these different things, that they don't get into because they're not interested in making the material world work. So we have both. So the problem is in these small-minded people, is they can't understand, they're worried about the gap between the two, but who cares for the gap? In other words, there's what I see and what I can use, and then there's what I can use on the metaphysical platform. But because they're not intelligent enough to connect the two, not that there's a need to, they say there's a problem. Right? That's the problem. That's the actual problem. You know? There's too much faith in modern science when even they don't know what's going on. If you leave out that God could have created it, you leave out a big body of knowledge that would explain why things function the way they do. So they always have to explain it from some other stupid angle. But that itself is not actually enough. It doesn't actually explain it. Oh, well, the canine teeth are there because before, we used to go around and jump on people and, rip their throats out. But why would we have had that in the first? Why were we doing that? The protozoa didn't have teeth, so why did we need teeth to eat? The protozoa is still eating today. How many, billions of years after the so-called scientific Big Bang? Protozoas are still there, eating the same way they did, so many billions of years ago. Fish are still there. Why did they have to come out on land, put on suits and start, multinational companies to eat? Right? Aren't little fish still there? Isn't plankton still there? What changed in the ocean that they had to get up and leave? You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't explain anything. It's just enough to that people go, oh, and then that's it. People who don't think. And not that these people aren't smart, but they don't want to think about God, so therefore it's enough for them. They just want to speculate. So people will leave them alone to speculate, give them their money, they'll get their grants so they can do their work. So it's a problem is that in defining how the universal structure is, there's the structure as God created it, which is the entanglement of the living entity from the spiritual platform down to the material, which is very important that you reverse that. It goes up. How does it go? How did we get down to earth? You put into it the maximum amount as a catalyst, false ego. So if I reduce the false ego, I take it from gross, you know, the gross earthly element, then back up to water. Then I start dealing with emotions and stuff like that, which is a much subtler platform than just gross body. Right? And so then senses also work there. You refine the senses. I reduce the ego again. It takes it back to fire. So then very active, not lazy, not that. We would consider that a better position. Take it back farther. It goes back to air. Right? So then there you're dealing with like knowledge, other things like that. Back to ether. We understand the arrangements, how the space, what's there. You just keep going. And then you remove all the false ego. You're not in the false material world anymore. So that's a very valuable method. And these same people don't like the fifth canto. They don't like the third canto. Why? Because it teaches them how to get out of here, and they're very determined to stay here. In fact, they have philosophies to keep everybody else here. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now, that's why it's there. The other thing is how you see it, because if you can't see it, you don't believe it. Therefore, the other description is then from what you see and what you can deal with. But the problem is they don't want to see like that, because that means I am not this body. I am the soul, and I'm not the controller and enjoyer of the cosmic creation. I'm not God. So that's not appreciated either. Right? So both of these positions are compatible, because both of them, the purpose is to get you out of the material world. One is by understanding the philosophy and the metaphysics. The other is by understanding just the gross matter that you're dealing with and all of its, you know, social, economic, emotional, sensual aspects, so you can properly not be bewildered by it and engage it in the Lord's service. But they have to, that point in between those two, it doesn't explain that. What's the use? What does it matter? You know what I'm saying? What does it matter if we come up with something different? You know, Copernicus came up with something different. He was a Polack, right? You know how many jokes there are about Poles? So, and somehow or another, the world bought it. It may have taken some time, but they bought it. So we come up with some different idea how the universe is there, and stick with it and give evidence for it, people will complain about it, but after a while, people will buy it. Because why? Because it's the truth. Right? So they've each got, before they said, Earth is in the center, all planets go around the Earth, which is true in one sense, but not true in another sense. Right? And then Copernicus says, no, the sun's the center, everything goes around the center. Which one sense is true, and another sense is not. And where the one is true, the other one's false. But the point is, the Vedic is what's right about both of them, that's what you use. No one's come up with, you know, all the planets except the Earth go around the sun, which is, that's, you know, how you say, most of what Copernicus says, that's what's true. But what he doesn't understand, the sun goes around the Earth. So that's where the other one is true. So therefore, all the planets go around the Earth, but they go around the Earth by going around the sun. So that makes a difference in their pattern. So the astrologically, then it would come out. But unless you combine the two, you really don't know what's going on. Right? Like astrologers today, they say they don't know astrology. But when a planet moves, we say it goes into retrograde. But they can't explain why it goes into retrograde. It's only explained because if it goes, the planet goes around the sun and that goes around the Earth, then in relationship to the Earth, as it goes around the sun, that side of the sun, it's farther away from the Earth. As it comes in around the sun this way, it gets closer to where we are. Right? But when it gets closer from this point, it's going backwards. It's just moving around the sun. So it's going forward all the time. But for us, it comes around here, and from this point, it goes backwards to here. And then it goes forward again. So even these so-called astrologers, they can't explain what's going on. And then they're going to make, you know, comments about Prabhupada. It's very unfortunate that they would go to that length. You know? Better they pack up and go home than go after Prabhupada. Very dangerous, yes.
I remember Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes a point that the materialistic empiricist is always wrong. Whereas the pure devotee, even if he's wrong, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's actually directly connected to Krishna, and so there can't be any question of being wrong, because his direction is in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that flows right.
Yeah. Because overall, they're getting into materially it's wrong. Okay, spiritually it's right, but materially it's wrong. But the point is a conditioned soul, anything they deal with is a mistake anyway. So they don't necessarily get it right. You know? So therefore, even they're finding a mistake in what Prabhupada does. It may not be a mistake. They could be mistaken. Or even if it is so-called a mistake, what they're doing is also a mistake. So I'm saying they have no base. They're trying to establish their existence on that and their uniqueness. Because if you can make a mistake there, then what else can you do with it? The Prabhupada's made a mistake, because they're not going to say philosophy. They're going to say astrology, something that everyone, oh no, yes, he's not an astrologer. But then from there, where they can take it? They can take it and apply it anywhere. That's the bottom line. They want to say Prabhupada didn't know the culture, didn't know this, didn't know that. Therefore, we can go on being malechas and yavanas, and, you know, everything's fine. But he already said that before most devotees joined. You don't have to change anything. Change your consciousness. So they're trying to say, we're going to change our consciousness back to mundane. You know, but Prabhupada is saying, whatever position you're in, you change the consciousness, you change everything else. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. The man who, the karmi who's come in contact with, you know, devotional service, and he comes to the temple in his, you know, karmi clothes, is enthusiastic about the aspects of Krishna consciousness and that. And his clothes don't really mean anything to him. He just gets up in the morning, that's what in his drawer he puts them on, comes to the temple. He's enthusiastic to come to the temple. He has no philosophy about his jeans and t-shirt. But the devotees do. So something's wrong there. Right? He wears it because that's all he's got. They wear it because that's what you have to wear. You know what I'm saying? You know how many people, you know, would probably blow your head off if you wore dress casuals in America? Trying to fit in with them? You know what I'm saying? In other words, everybody is only worried about the social strata that they came from. You know what I'm saying? That's all it is. Those who are street fashion, when they put on karmi clothes, you know, for preaching, they put on street clothes. And they look like some scum off the street. Those came from a little bit better families, they wear dress casuals. Like that. You know, so what to do? But they're only dressing how, basically, they grew up. So they're only fitting into only their little world. They're not actually fitting into the world. Right? Because then if you're looking for the world, you have to find what's universal. And even then, like what you're saying, is what is done actually for Krishna, then it has an effect. But if it's being done because that's the way you like it, and then saying it's for Krishna, that's okay, but understand it's a lower level. Sakam Karma Yoga is lower than Nishkam. So don't preach Sakam that's actually the better position and Nishkam's not good. You're up against, you know, God and the Acharyas here. you got a problem. To say, I am at this position, and therefore I have these attachments, I have to deal like this, that takes honesty. In this age of everyone talking honesty, I don't see much honesty. Why don't they just say, I'm attached? I'm a Westerner, I've never spent time in India. In fact, I hate spending time in India. And I won't spend time in India. And so I have actually no exposure to the Indian culture like Prabhupada wanted and asked the devotees to do. And so therefore, I can't understand in any way, shape, or form. In other words, I'm unqualified to understand how the Vedic culture works. And therefore, I'm attached to my Western concept of culture and that. But because I am special, I can't be something less than someone else. Therefore, I will make up a philosophy and therefore establish that how my perspective, my worldview, is actually the real transcendental worldview. End quote. Why don't they say that? That's honest. But honesty these days is not real honesty, it's just political correctness. So it's diplomacy. So it's just a trick. The devotees are being tricked by a few people, unscrupulous people, about political correctness and all these other things like that. It's a trick. That's all. And the trick is there simply for those persons' false ego. That's all. Right? Prabhupada took this Gaudiya Vaishnava culture of the West, it worked like a charm. Anywhere where you take it and introduce it in its natural state, it works immediately. I mean, within short time, hundreds, thousands of devotees. And as soon as then you introduce that Western polluted mentality, it stops. Right? America, free, this, that. You bring it in, bang, thousands of devotees. And then you say, why don't you do that? Oh, we can't, there's no hippies, there's no this and that. Right now, it's New Age. They know even more than the hippies knew. Hippies was just, woo, nice, woo, cool. You know, now they can appreciate a little more. Then you take the exact same method and all that, you take it halfway across the world over to Russia, right? Communist state, completely that, no religion, no nothing, no freedom of thought, anything, exact opposite of America. Bang, it works like a charm, just like it did in America. Thousands of devotees in that. As soon as you introduce the modern American mentality, boom, it stops. You know what I'm saying? Take the same thing, take it over to China, bang, it works. So, well, what is this they're talking about? You know? What is it they're talking about? It works. It's proven itself. But they don't want to, they can't do it, so therefore they don't want to do it. And then they make a philosophy that, you know, no one should do it. It's one thing, this is what works for me, this is what state I'm in right now, therefore I'm doing it. That's honest. This other stuff is just politics. But they will cover it with truth, honesty, morality, goodness. It's just politics. It's just nice sounding words to cover their political stand. That's all. That's all. It's just politics. Because we see that the more you introduce this stuff, the less the quality of life in the society and the social interaction between the devotees is. It just gets worse and worse. So therefore, what is it doing? What good is it doing? But they're professing it's good. Why? It's good for them. That's all. It's not good for everybody. So a conditioned soul from the conditioned platform, you know, what is important to them, they want to say that's what's good for everybody. Right? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. But the problem is maybe we're not ganders. Okay, so we'll end here today.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi. Baladin, you take some of the stuff upstairs. Take that, these, give them to Preeti and that, put that on my desk.
And the
Yeah, give those to Preeti Baladin.
This is Boga.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I'm just saying, because then we can do something with it. Same that guy did. So that means you're still in Israel?
Yeah, I'm living in Israel,
okay,
yeah.
But you're planning to move somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. The situation is going, like, really crazy there. And, you know, when it happens, I don't want to be there. So actually, no, we were planning to move to Australia, but now we got a new baby born. My son is getting 10 years old. So, you know, we're seriously thinking about moving to Mayapur. Get him into the school and, you know, because he's growing up and the whole society is...
It's tough. It's tough.
It's not good for him. So... So, you know, my wife, she also, she's got this idea. And
yeah, if you like it here and you have somewhere to take care of all that, it's a nice time. It's a nice thing.
So I'd like to meet also with the, whoever's the manager in this school. I want to talk about this. My son.
I'm not sure if you see it. You have to talk to Madhava Garanga. Madhava Garanga.
Okay.
We don't need to speak. Everything's done.
Okay, so it's just a matter of that. Just make a plan, and then once you have a plan, then it's something good.
Just do it.
Yeah.
We're going to go talk to Madhava Garanga.
Yeah, and just work out, because I think he was going to plan something or something also. So just, you know, okay, great. Okay.
I'd like to invite you to Israel. I don't know how to work it out, you know.
The difficulty comes is the getting through the border. They ask so many questions. I'm not so
Not anymore.
That.
Not anymore. They really take care of those people who really want to come to Israel. They build a new airport. It's a completely new thing, and they don't give any trouble to anybody.
Because last time you came, they really like anything.
Yeah. But now it's you know, many people coming, you know, devotees, and they dress, you know, Vaishnava, no problem.
No, they can come in as a devotee also.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Bhaktivedyan Maharaj and Kavichanda Swami. And it's like it's a free space. It's a different arrangement, and they want people to come.
Okay.
So, and especially with American passport.
How long are you here for?
10 days, maybe 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So I you know, because I spoke to Radha Chiran then when you were in Australia. So I just couldn't figure out how can I meet you, and I didn't understand what. So if you know, if any chance, then you come. And we arrange the tickets and everything for you from India, anywhere place, you know, in Europe. Because I want to still, you know, invest in that preaching in Israel before I'm gone.
Okay. Well, maybe you can, when you talk to Madhava Garanga, you could also talk to him about this.
Yeah, sure.
Like that, in the details.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Nimai Pandit, okay.
From Barcelona, Spain.
Barcelona, okay.
I'm from Barcelona Temple Secretary there. I'm passing here. I'm staying 15 days here.
Okay.
And it's my first time in the Mayapur.
Oh, okay. That's
and I was very eager to meet you. Because I've been listening to some lectures from you and, you know, just not from you, from other people.
Okay.
So I would like to, you know, ask if it's possible to just get ready to talk with you, just maybe to this class, to this lecture, just ask you in a humble way your questions, just to understand it better.
Yeah. See, the simple thing is, these devotees who are also saying these things, generally they're sincere in their attempts to do something Krishna conscious, just that the particular method that's used is not so useful. It's not that they have, you know, bad intent. You know, they're just thinking that this would work better. They've seen other ways of application that didn't work so good, so they're just thinking this would work better and stuff. And so for them it works nice, and for a few in their group it works nice, because they may have a better or a more proper understanding of its application. But because the basis is not so strong, then when you take it out into general devotees, then it starts to have a lot of problems. But its basis is not correct. But because they're trying to connect it to Krishna and this and that, so therefore it doesn't have that much of a devastating effect. But over long term, it can wear away a lot of the culture and value system. So then it would take a lot to put it back. And so. But you can talk to Madhava Garanga about time.
Do it.
to meet you.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if it's the proper time. If you have a few minutes, I have a couple of questions.
If they're quick, because otherwise it's not the work. Yeah, it's okay.
Actually, what is in ISKCON, what is Diksha is considered the real initiation or
the second?
Or the second initiation?
See, the first and second are both part of one process. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati applied it just splitting it into two. Because that way then people come in, they can get the one, it means there's some commitment, they can get the one, get the benefit, and then more time of practicing, they can come to the standard where they're qualified for the other half. So they're both. So technically why we say is the Diksha, or the second initiation, is the real initiation, is because it's the other half of what's done with first, so it's complete. But mainly what we're talking about when we say Diksha is the real initiation, we mean that over Upanayanam. It means those who are, they have their family gurus, they get the Vedic, you know, Brahminical initiation in the home, that's there for study of the Vedic aspects and certain things that they can do. But it's not specifically a spiritual initiation. So that's why we say Diksha is the real initiation, and Diksha is the spiritual initiation, and these others are not. The Upanayana means to bring near, so like that. But a first and second, first connects you with the Guru, but second means that the process is complete. First is enough to take you back to Godhead, but at the same time as the second is very useful in helping you get back to Godhead.
So like one who has taken first initiation and the Guru is gone, so what is his duty is to take second initiation from another guru?
Generally it would, but it doesn't mean the first guru is not still there. So he has two gurus.
That's still his Diksha guru, is the one who gave him first initiation.
Yes, means, yeah, as long as, you know, he was, especially if he was practicing and everything like that and then left. So that would be natural. So all it is someone else on their behalf is basically giving her, still you have to consider them. You know, so it's not that they just, you know, gave and that's it. You know, it's like they should also be considered in the process because they are involved in it. But they're just completing what's already been begun by the first guru. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And what else I wanted to ask you regarding this? Another case is one devotee has he's received the beads. And then the guru has told him, I will initiate you in Jagannath Puri. You know, you'll get name and yagya and everything. But I give you the beads. And the guru left the planet. Mm-hmm. So what should he think? That I've received diksha, or I need to take diksha?
The point is, see, diksha means is the mantras and the sacred thread. So he's gotten the beads. So that's just part of, you know, Nama, so you can say that person's the Nama Guru. But he was intending to do these others, but it wasn't done. So then you just get it done with someone else. But that person, that original person, would also be one of your gurus. Like that. Because Diksha is the technical point of getting the mantras for chant, for use in deity worship. Like that. Because getting the beads is actually, the samskar is getting a name of Krishna. And you also chant, but the chanting can go on before that happens. But you only get the name of Krishna when you come to that platform, because then you identify yourself as servant of Krishna. So therefore, then that aspect is there. So they're your Nama Guru, but then someone else would be the Diksha Guru. But just find someone, the Diksha Guru, who's favorable to whoever the Nama Guru was, so that there'll be a nice consistency there and everything like that.
But how the if he takes, he has received first initiation, he's taking second, how he has to consider the guru who gives him second initiation as a Diksha Guru? Shiksha Guru?
No, it's a Diksha Guru.
He's Diksha Guru.
But he's just completed the other part. You only have one because there's only one at a time. The other one's gone, so you only have one. But the other one is part of it, so he's respected. So he keeps both pictures when he does his worship.
But he has to also completely surrender to him, not just to the first guru.
The point is this means
It's not just...
How, it means how you work out the diksha aspect, that's one thing. But the point is the siksha aspect, you still have to have someone you're surrendered to.
Right.
So the point is how you work it out. If he's the person that can be the siksha guru, you surrender to him and he's giving the second part of the diksha. So therefore, then that works nicely. If he's not, someone else is that siksha guru, then one, you could get him to give the mantra. Otherwise, then you get it from this one person with the understanding it's in giving, completing the process of that first one. And this other one is a prominent siksha guru, but still he's to be respected in some capacity that you have to work out.
Very complex subject.
Oh, you're dealing with human beings. It has to be complex. You're dealing with relationships.
Thank you, Matthew.